and she's a professor in the Department of Anthropology, History, and Social Medicine, as well as Associate Director of the Center to Address Disparities in Children's Oral Health at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Barker earned her PhD in Medical Anthropology in the joint program at the University of California, Berkeley, and San Francisco, and her Master's of Science in Medical Sociology at the University of London. Please welcome Dr. Barker.
Thank you.
Or perhaps you can, yeah.
Just move this over here so I can see what's going
on. Okay.
Good morning. I'm going to be talking about a piece of research that we've done, a pilot study in a rural Latino community in California, looking at their beliefs and the oral health implications for fluoridation. And I'd like to acknowledge my research team, two of whom are here today, Rosalie Leah Mendoza, who's going to speak after me, Jane Weintraub, who's not here today, Howard Pollack, who is, and Kathleen O'Connor, who's now at the University of Texas in El Paso. I have no interests or conflicts to disclose. Long-term exposure to fluoride, especially through water, has been shown to be quite effective at diminishing levels of dental caries. And Latino populations in particular have, rural and farm worker families in particular, have very high caries prevalence. And so if they were to have access to fluoridated water, we could potentially reduce the caries rate for that group. Bottled water in general is not optimally fluoridated. And so long-term or prolonged exposure to simply bottled water reduces a very significant opportunity to address caries prevalence. Now, Latinos, more than other groups, are likely to avoid drinking public water supplies and to consume bottled water, and this has been found to be the case nationwide when studies have been done in various communities. So many structural and individual barriers exist to prevention of pediatric caries in particular, and especially in rural areas, most notably around access to care. So insurance and availability of dentists in rural areas. Nevertheless, one of the things that have not been studied extensively really are people's beliefs and practices around water and water consumption that might also serve to prevent tap water being used or the acceptability of fluoride. So we set out simply to try and understand that. The study aims was very simple, to look at beliefs and practices, and we focused on Latino parents of young 1 to 5 year old children in one particular community in California's Central Valley. And fluoride was not deliberately added to this community's tap water. The study sites a fairly small, typical town of the Central Valley. About 9,000 permanent residents that swell to about 20,000 during harvest season. 95% of the residents self-identify as Latino, mostly but not entirely of Mexican origin. It's about a third from El Salvador. 40% of the households in 2008 were at or below federal poverty levels. So we're dealing not just with Latino families, but also low-income families. And untangling that confounder is sometimes extremely difficult. 40% of the children of the population in this city, as they call itself, are children under 18. It has a federally qualified health care center and 2.5 dentists. The half is a gentleman who's retired and practices only several days a week. We use qualitative methods to go in and study in this community that we had previously worked in, so we're fairly well known to the community. had focus groups, three groups with mothers only, one group with fathers only. We also did in-depth, semi-structured interviews with both key informants who could tell us about the water supply and water use in the community, and 21 parents of children aged 0 to 5 years. We also had them fill in sociodemographic and water use questionnaires. All the data was collected in Spanish, then audio tape translated and transcribed, and we used standard thematic analysis. Sociodemographics were really that we were dealing with a adult population around mid-30s in age, most of whom had not had any level of high school education, and in fact for the El Salvadoran women in particular, they may not have gone to school at all. So we're dealing with a very low literate population as well as low income and immigrant. Most of them were born outside the U.S., but had been living in the U.S., mainly in this particular town, for on average around 13 years. Income was very low, less than $30,000 per household per year, and two-thirds were engaged in farm work occupation of some kind. Almost 95% had children who, at least one child who was under 6 years of age. And in answering the questionnaire and the questions, we asked people to focus, in fact, on their child who was closest to five in age, so that we were able to get a somewhat more consistent response. We knew what kind of developmental level the child was at. They had a completed family size of about 2.8. The parent reported having an untreated cavity, at least 62% of them. Parents rated their five-year-old's oral health as excellent, very good, or good. Only 66% of respondents claimed that. Five-year-old's last visit to a dentist was either 3 or more years prior to our interviewing with them, or never. And this was true for 22% of the parents who were responding to us. And only under half, 42% of the parents had insurance, but almost all of the children had access to insurance. That insurance was Medicaid or public insurance, which also has an impact on access to dental services. These demographic and oral health and access to care profiles are very, very similar to many other rural Latino communities. And so although we had a quite convenient sample drawn up, they're not at all remarkable and fairly typical of this region and elsewhere. So the results were more than 95% of the sample reported never drinking municipal tap water at all. 50% reported using tap water in cooking only. And this was very much accompanied by a commentary that prolonged boiling would render whatever problems there were in the water, they would render the water safe. And some people, but not everybody, but some people attributed this to being a common phenomenon that they had engaged in their home countries and their home communities. So they were very familiar with and quite comfortable with the idea of boiling water before you used it. More than 90% of these people purchased water from commercial water sources. A few among the more upper income of these folks had installed filtration systems in their home, but most simply bought their water from commercial sources. The major water vending outlet in these towns were called water mills because they look like this. And they're freestanding vending machines that stand in grocery store parking lots. And you pull up, pay your money, and get your gallon or 5 gallons of water. They use reverse osmosis. So they filter out even the natural fluoride that is in the water, and the natural fluoride level of this water is reported to be about 0.6 parts per million. It's below optimal fluoridation level, but it's better than nothing at all. And in terms of costs, people were paying up to $1 per gallon, and many households report spending $10 or more per week. Now, this is quite dramatically different from the estimates of cost for tap water, where in general people estimate that a tap water costs about 2 cents per week, or approximately. When asked why, people said the organoleptic qualities of the tap water made them not want to use it. The taste bad, it was salty or chlorinated, it smelled bad, it smelled like chlorine, or it was, in some instances people described it as a sewer, and it was discolored. It left a residue, including a residue on the skin. They claim that it rots and clogs pipes, and if it will do that to pipes, what will it do to my body? And in particular, they were worried about the water making people sick, and especially children, who they saw as very vulnerable. They were bolstered by a well-documented past trouble with agricultural pollution in the water supply. And this past trouble was transmitted by the residents to any newcomer who arrived in town. And so it was a very well established and justified in the past belief, but it was kept alive by their social networks. And it was strengthened by a lack of access to any reports about the local water quality. But this was compounded by their low literacy rates, their lack of trust in city government, most of which they pointed out was that the mayor and other people say the water is safe, but when we talk to them, they're standing there with their bottle of water in their hand. So they had some evidence to suggest that government wasn't trustworthy. And there's lack of easy access to the report, unless you're a homeowner, and unless you also had access to a computer. Compared to other kinds of beverages, people said water was the best thing for everybody to drink, including children. But nevertheless, because of their concerns over tap water safety, people tended to drink sodas, Gatorade, fruit juices, or flavored waters, none of which are going to do their prevention of caries very well. People hadn't heard of fluoride. In general, 26%, one quarter, hadn't heard of fluoride. Those who had were very unclear about its purpose or its benefits. Around half thought it was to whiten the teeth. And a very small percentage, only 17, really understood its benefits and purpose. Although they did report their children used fluoridated toothpaste, and 30% had fluoride drops or tablets prescribed for their children. The drops, however, children resisted because they taste bitter, and the mothers worried about overdosing the children or forgetting to give them. The fluoride tablets the kids liked because they were sweet, so they treated them like candy, and they kept pestering mom for more and more. So there are clearly problems there. The upshot is that I think people were willing to give children fluoride drops and tablets if needed. Once we explained to them what fluoride would do, they were very accepting of that. They felt that if it benefited their children, they were very happy to have it. However, they all preferred to get their fluoride in water rather than the other way, because they said it's cheaper, it's easier, and you get more consistent dosing, so they don't have to worry. But none would use a municipal tap water because of its smells, taste, and so forth. 90% or more said that they would buy fluoridated commercial water if it was available. However, most of them wanted it to come in tap water. And so the upshot is that drinking bottled water or commercial water in these communities may be a strong indication that kids in particular are being exposed to less than optimal fluoride, and the perceptions of the water's qualities and associated ideas of safety have very important implications for whether or not you would get fluoridation into these communities and actually get people drinking the water. They're like many other communities, they just don't trust the water because of its taste, smell, and color. And abstract technical reports of water quality not only have to be believed and trusted, but they have to match people's experience. And people's experience wasn't that the water was safe. Anything that left residues on your skin was not going to be doing you any good, was their line of argument. So the conclusion is that the community's deep concern about the water safety was really going to trump any benefit that they would expect to get or be willing to accept from fluoridation of the water supply at this point in time. Thank you.